Are you ready?
Okay.
Quick review. Last time we got into the image of the Chinese, that was Dream 19, where he receives a manuscript from the Chinese. And that's a very rich image. When we're dealing with so much material, I think it's useful to just try to keep in mind one phrase for some of this stuff. And what I keep in mind for the Chinese is that meaning lies concealed in events.
Concealed in?
Events.
Yeah.
In material events. Meaning is concealed in matter. Let's think of the I Ching. Mm-hmm. How do the coins know? There are others, of course. The Tao is a very important concept. The qualitative aspect of numbers, the equal weight given to dark and light. But I think for Pali's purposes, they have a much different take on what we consider the split between spirit and matter. Dream 20, he was called to be a professor of theoretical physics. We talked about that being to present the psychology of this physics.
The psychology
of this physics that we're talking about. The psychology of the implications of the new physics and Jung's work. Dream 21, he had dreams of columns with cuneiform writing on. Columns we took as a image of a gravestone from its form in antiquity, and the cuneiform would be an ancient script that's repeated in the image of the temple with no roof. So the temple would be the body, and there's no spiritual dimension through which to contain that temple, that body. And that would have to do with his life in general, and also in particular with his relationship to Von Franz. If there is no spiritual perspective, then that erotic feeling for her can't ever assume its meaning. 21, Dream 21, we dreamt that the woman is passive, and he is given a high voltage cable, which he realizes could fry him. And the author didn't so much, but I pointed out that relationship between passivity of the anima and the influx of energy being destructive. Dream 22, we talked about the laboratory with the sun shining in. I questioned the sun, thought maybe it should be moonlight. Going back to that dream where he's walking in the moonlight. June 23, he pretends like he doesn't know Von Franz in public, and then he's writing her a letter in secret, and then he's to give a lecture on my Chinese contents, which he took, and I agreed, showed that this secret relationship with Von Franz and what she means has to be brought out in the open. It can't be done in secret by letters. And it doesn't get much clearer than that, my Chinese contents. Dream 24, he's to lecture at the psychological club with Von Franz, and everything goes well except we never do hear if she gets to lecture, suggesting that he cuts out her point of view. Dream 25, a very difficult and ambiguous dream. He goes to Germany. On return, he realizes he has forgotten his passport. There's a way to get back without the passport by entering a particular train through a left-hand passage. The train is filled with Chinese, and he goes past the military base. I think the German theme is definitely his tendency to get lost in ideas. We'll see more of that today. I talked about the passport and the not really knowing that the issue is identity here. Why we go through these things, we have to have a larger perspective. That would be like the roof on the Greek temple. You know, the reason I'm going through this stuff, you have to say to yourself, is because I'm developing into somebody. And if you don't have that perspective, if you don't feel that's important, well, nothing happens, because the experiences are just overwhelming and depressing and discombobulating. We weren't sure how to interpret it. He interpreted it one day. We considered a couple ways of interpreting it. I don't really know finally how to where to come down, but the trip back, was that a genuine return or a not genuine return? The things that speak about it being a genuine return would be the train full of Chinese. The thing that would speak about it being a disingenuous return would be that he sneaks on the train. He still doesn't have his passport. And the military, you could interpret either way, that he needs discipline or that he's rigid. So there, I think it's up in the air. But I think what we can observe is the German theme in the absence of the passport. And that took us up to page 80. Questions?
With the German thing, the obvious suggestion that Schopenhauer is an important factor in that for Pauli. And from what I gather, Schopenhauer is important for Jung also.
We'll get to that.
You're going to get to that?
Yeah, maybe not today, but we'll spend a considerable amount of time on that.
Yeah, yeah. I like to get...
But it's more than just Schopenhauer.
It's more, yeah.
But for him, Schopenhauer was definitely a problem, the way he appropriated it.
But for Jung, from what I gather, just a little bit, he was positive for Jung.
He was, and you know, I don't know exactly what Jung did draw from him. I'd have to bone up on that. Mm-hmm. But I think certainly early Jung. He later put much more importance on Kant. We'll talk about Kant today. That's a good question. I'll see what I can find on that. What he did draw, what Jung did draw. Mm-hmm. If I knew it, I forgot it.
Is that in the Nietzsche seminars where he writes?
I'll have to just go to the collected works and see what he comes up with.
Yeah, I think it is in there. I remember reading some, but I forgot what it was. But I remember it was drawn from Schopenhauer, but I don't remember what it was. Yeah.
I think the idea of reflection. Yeah. And that's coming back. Mm-hmm. Hold off on that.
Yeah.
We can talk about that when we get to Schopenhauer. Mm-hmm. I think it's the idea of reflecting. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay, page 80. I talked about already, kind of ahead of time. Just to remind you that in the first, remember, this is just at the time that the Jung Institute was being founded, 1948, 48-50. Pauli was on the board, the curatorium. We affectionately call it the crematorium.
So that suggests that Jung really thought a lot of
Pauli. Yeah.
And his importance.
Yeah. Yeah, Jung hung in there as long as he could, and then he finally threw up his hands, I think. Which is really, Jung just had incredible patience with people. I don't know how he did that, but he did. Also, put yourself back in the time. I think that helps a little bit. If Jung doesn't have much acceptance now, it had less then. And so here was this little struggling group of people founding an institute and trying to begin to publish, to make his work accessible. And the first series of works started at this time, which were, I forget the exact official name, but publications of the C.G. Jung Institute. So it was attaching Jung's name to lesser students, to other students. So it was kind of a big deal. And Jung published an essay, and Pauli published an essay in the first volume. And von Franz wanted to be in there, and she got X'd out. I think probably, as I said, because of Meyer. Meyer didn't like her. Just, I think it was just jealousy. Now, I loved him, but nobody's perfect. And she was hurt, and rightly so. And again, I don't want to talk about Pally's personality to the point where you get turned off. But first of all, you've got to remember to distinguish between the person and the unconscious. And secondly, I think it's very helpful to see, how does a narcissist work? We're getting an absolute perfect document on what the self-centered personality does with other people. Another way to put that is what the inflated personality. That's just our word for what we're calling narcissism today. What we're looking at, just briefly, and it's really not the depth of the material, but just to get you to know what kind of a difficult ego we're dealing with, we're looking at now how Pally responded to von Franz's disappointment. I would say genuine disappointment, and she was generally treated unfairly, truly treated unfairly. How he reacted to that, how he's going to minimize all her feelings. And you can see then the problem with the anima. This is what a man without an anima does. The anima would be the ability to resonate with her feelings. And what moonlight is, moonlight would be the ability to feel with her and commiserate with her over this situation. And see, the old sun, all the stuff we've seen, is the disregard of this feminine aspect of experience, of a woman, of a man's experience and of a woman's. Of a man's emotional experience and a woman's experience in toto. So, just some of the quotes. He writes, the old publication problems. Old, see? First of all, it's old. It's not old, it's very current. I don't take seriously anymore. Well, she does. But in contrast, it is important to take seriously that you have become somewhat uncertain about our relationship. Why shouldn't she? It could be true that it could be that the true reasons are still unconscious. So how he's using this psychological language. Remember the uncommitted archetypal thinking? How he's using psychological language to diminish her own self. That the true reasons for this are still unconscious, and that the connection with the old publication conflict is only a seeming one. It's just vicious. It's just vicious. So, you know, he kicked my definition of a narcissist. I don't know if I ever told you. I actually think it's quite good. A narcissist is somebody who kicks you in the shin and then complains about the way you say ow. And that's what exactly, she has been kicked in the shins, and he's diminishing her emotional response and saying, there's something wrong with you for being upset. This is at least my first impression, and those are often correct. There.
Yeah.
But then, true to the borderline dimension of his personality, in the next, I think it's a different letter, but in the same time period, I'm a little depressed because it always happens that we were in Zurich, that we are in Zurich and traveling both at different times, and we never connect. But I'm beginning to suffer some because of the long separation from you. So, flip-flop.
It's all about him.
Right.
Yeah.
He's exactly.
Yeah. 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 More BS. The thought came to me that you're assigning extraordinary importance to where your work is, it must be published, is based on a concretistic misunderstanding. See, who has the concretistic misunderstanding? And that the whole matter is due to another symbolic meaning. Should be you want. You want to be read, which is true. That is, the creative work is to lead you out of isolation from other people. That is true. you are certainly cut off in your human relationships. Now, I don't think that was true, but I think you could say she was spiritually cut off. This is lonely work, and we love to have resonance. Groups like this mean a great deal to me and anyone who's doing this work, because normally you put the stuff out there and people just say, huh, or else they belittle you, one or the other. And so in that sense, I think, yes, we all are suffering under an isolation. The first volume is being read, Too Little, means endogamy. Now, endogamy is actually a word from anthropology. And there are two types of relationships in this anthropological schema. There's endogamous and exogamous. Endogamous basically means familial, in the family. So incest is endogamous. And the idea is that the taboo system of primitive tribes, so-called primitive tribes, is set up to prevent you from having sex with somebody who's too close to you, relationally. I think even cousins are forbidden. If there's a similar sex link, like you can have sex with your... Oh, I always get this mixed up. You can have sex with your cousin... Say a girl. You can have sex with your cousin on your from your brother. From your uncle. You can have sex with the cousin from your uncle, but you can't have sex with the cousin from your aunt. They make very fine distinctions because there's a sex boundary crossed. Like, it's easier for me as a man. If I have an aunt and an uncle, right. My uncle has a daughter, and my aunt has a daughter, and I'm in a primitive tribe.
These are like two different. I mean, like you're talking about. Okay, you, your mother and your father. Then there's this aunt and this uncle. Is that how?
Yeah, I suppose my.
They're not married. Is that you're saying?
No, let's suppose my uncle marries. And my aunt marries.
Okay.
Two different people.
Right.
And so two different families.
Okay.
Does it mean the difference between your mother and your father?
Yes, it does. It's actually more complicated. I was trying to simplify it. But let's take my dad. My dad has a brother and a sister. And each brother and sister marries, has a family. I am allowed to have sex with. My father's sister's daughter. Okay. I'm not allowed to marry or have sex with my father's brother's daughter. Because in their mind, there's a sex separation, and that breaks the incest taboo for them. Huh. So, this is all endogamy. Or endogamy, I think it's hard G, endogamy in anthropology. You can't marry too close to yourself, and there are very specific rules who you can and cannot get close to. And so certain relationships are endogamous and certain relationships are exogamous, which means past the incest taboo.
It seems like that's related somewhat to, I don't know exactly, but like in a lot of African tribal culture, the uncle to a woman.
Yeah.
Is actually more powerful in the relationship to her
right.
kids than even her husband.
Right. So you see, that's good because it's really, that makes my uncle more my father than my father.
Right.
And then that's why all this fancy dancing, who I can and can't, mm-hmm. depending on what's my uncle. If it's my uncle, it's like my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be like my sister in their mind. But if it's my aunt, she's not as powerful. And so I'm allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm giving you the basic scheme. There are many, 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 many varieties. This is actually quite important for us because it comes up in transference. If you look at, we didn't get into it. We went through these pictures on volume 16 of the Psychology of Transference. But here's where Freud and Jung differ. Jung... I don't want to get off. Are you interested in this? Jung based his work on a wonderful guy, John Layard, who was a British Oxford anthropologist who studied this stuff in the South Seas. And just an aside story, I guess this was the day before medication. Layard was apparently a very fine guy and a very fine analyst, but unfortunately he was manic depressive. And you never knew when you wanted to see him whether he's going to be up, you know, or down. And so you'd call up beforehand, you know, and see him where he was. And if he was gone, you wouldn't go in to see him. But he kept going. I mean, you can't blame a person for that, because that's an organic disturbance, and this is in the days before lithium. So he really maintained a life of integrity, though he was crazy. And he did this work on the marriage rites. And what Layard said to Jung coming out of this is that it looked like in the marriage rites, you couldn't marry somebody too close, which we've just discussed, and you couldn't marry somebody too far away. It was forbidden to marry somebody with whom there was no relationship. So he said to Jung, his conclusion was that incest is an instinct that needs to be satisfied, but at a certain distance. And that there are two instincts in the human being, the endogamous, the need to unite with what is similar, and the exogenous, the need to unite with what is different. And that is what Freud called incest, that endogamous thing. And it's therefore, in Freud's mind, sick. And therefore, a transference is wrong. And Jung was saying, no, look, that incestuous complex is part of every human's nature. It's not a deal of family romance. And that's what is playing out, and you have to be able to understand both dimensions, that there's an incestuous component and there's a non-incestuous component. It's very beautiful. That psychology of transference is very beautiful. And so in the therapeutic relationship, often there'll be incest themes come up between a man and a woman, and it freaks them out. And the Freudian will say, you see, you're just replaying childhood fantasies. And Jung is saying, no, that is an essential component of the human psyche, and it really means uniting with yourself. And that's what the transference is aiming at, is your reunion, your going home, so to speak, in the dream that Mary was telling of her daughter. That's your going home to yourself, and if you interpret it as pathology, you're destroying the person's development. So actually it turns into a pretty big discussion about how you handle, understand certain feelings in therapy. But going back to that's a real diversion, but going back to Montfrantz, what he's saying is you're worrying too much because you have a feeling of not being able to connect with the world, and that is your incest issue, and that's what this has touched. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Can you say that in the words? I'm just struggling with how her being read too little means that.
That he's saying to her, you know, your problem is you're too locked up in yourself. Mm-hmm. That would be endogamy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
And when your books don't get read, that hits that button, mm-hmm. and that's why you're reacting. Which I think is true. But she has a right to feel that. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Any writer needs to be read. Because if they're not, what is inside them destroys them. I can't tell you how many dreams I've seen of writers and artists where as soon as the work, if they've had a block in creating, as soon as they start creating, the dreams turn to them sharing that work with the world. Like that is an integral part of the creative process. I always tell them that, you know, you think that just creating it is the creative process, but as far as the unconscious is concerned, creative process is not finished until the work is first created and then secondly understood. That's why these artists who are not understood go crazy, because it is such a violation of human nature that, as far as the soul is concerned, creativity isn't finished until somebody receives the work and thanks them for it and is changed by it or has understood it. So her upset is valid. It's part of her life urge to get her out of being stuck. And yes, she should be upset when it's not accepted, because that's an assault on her soul. And he gets the fact right, but he misvalues it. See, that's the sick feeling function. It sees the fact, but it can't evaluate it. And what is so dangerous about talking with people like that, if you're not aware of your own feeling function, you'll say, oh yes, you're right. Because he is right, 50%. But the 50% that he's wrong is deadly, because it's trying to get her to back down in the face of her desire to communicate, rather than to push forward. And that is what's so lethal about people like this.
Jung thought a lot of Von Hans.
Also,
I'm struggling with, if he edited all this stuff.
Well, he didn't.
Oh, okay.
See, that's the problem. I mentioned last time that all this stuff was taken out of his hands.
Oh, okay.
You would think that the author has control over the publication, but he doesn't.
Okay, that's what you're thinking.
Right.
I mean,
even to some of the titles given to his books, he did not want. He did not choose. But the editor said, this is what we're going to publish it under, because it's a business decision.
So Jung didn't have this powerful control over his group like Freud did.
Well, it wasn't his group, it was publishers. You know, this is a business deal.
But Freud would have made sure that everything was flowing
I doubt it, really.
Huh?
I doubt it. These publishers have the power. I mean, it's a business. And they're not going to put something out there that is going to cost them money.
No, I mean, I was thinking more or less who would get published, like Von Franz. He would have made a decision about when.
Yeah, but he's not a publisher. Oh. Publishers publish. It's a business. Do you know how many books Freud's first volume of Dream Interpretation sold? Seven. I don't think he was in a position to argue with a publisher. Some more. You want some more BS, or shall we go on?
Well,
it's good training for human relationships, Eric. I'm sure you're going to hear this sort of stuff a lot in your sojourn through relationships, if you haven't already.
I think that description of the unconscious, the unconscious definition of what the creative involves, that it has to be received, understood. And accept it to the point that it changes the person.
Or at least that you feel it's understood.
Or that you...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just always hope that's so contrary to
right.
What we've always been told to just create, and that's what's the important thing.
I know, that's my own opinion. I've just seen that so many times. As soon as the work is done, the person will dream of presenting it in their dining room, and the dining room has been opened up to the general public. Or they take the work down to the pub and they share it with people at the pub. Or they're waiting for an audience to come to see the work, and the audience will be on its way. It always, or almost always, follows. And that's my opinion, that creativity is the creation and reception of a piece of work.
So when people were doing this sort of work, Jung, Von Franz, all of them, and it was being put out there and not accepted and even criticized and made...
I wouldn't say not accepted, but very slowly. You know, Jung wanted to teach at the university, and he was excluded.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that, how ridiculous that is.
Yeah.
But we're still
there. Or even now. Yeah, but I mean, Jung is a couple of notches above what's floating around now. And I think it was very painful. Because, you know, he was human, and he said, you know, you can find some of his letters. Did you ever think maybe I like going to the supermarket and saying hi to people, too? I mean, you forget Jung, but, you know, he pooped. He wanted just to have friends and have a cigar with the neighbors, and that, I wouldn't say it was cut off to him, but it was much more difficult.
Wasn't there the story that this one bar he used to go into, they thought he was a stonemason?
Yeah, I told them that in the Saturday. Yeah. I think that gave him great satisfaction to be received.
So in his case, you know, he created and it was rejected.
Yes, I would have to say.
And so, so would his unconscious say that he had finished the creative process, based on your definition?
Well, I think he suffered over it, and you read his letters, and he suffered over it till the very end. And I think, you know, that I think one of the last dreams he had, if I remember correctly, he was working on. He was asked to write that chapter in Man and His Symbols. And he had a dream that... He said no. I think he said no at first. And he had a dream that he was... There was a whole throng of people waiting outside his house to hear his work. And then he consented to write it. But see, that was a lifelong struggle.
So we're saying that the Chinese way would suggest that you would begin to understand that you will never fulfill that positive image, because that there's a bigger thing that will have to evolve, and you're part of that. Is that a part of the creative thing?
Yeah. The problem is we're also Western. And Western wants to be heard. And I think both are true. Let me see. That next. Well, just more nonsense. On the symbolic level, personal love can lead to the goal of your creative products finding general consideration, and at the end of your spiritual end of the end of your spiritual isolation as well as a human one. And he says it, but he does everything he can do to prohibit that. It's actually what he needs to hear from her. And see, that's what a projection is. Eros is also a creative spirit. The next section is just bunk. The next passage. Go ahead.
Because you refused to show an interest in biology, you didn't correctly play the role of anima that I wished from you, whereas I actually responded with animosity. Didn't you love that?
Okay. I was getting there. No, it was the one above that I was going to skip.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, I was going to explain. This is another point of contention that we've seen how the stranger and Sophia and the Chinese woman introduce the theme of a causal probability and the material world, in other words, synchronicity. So what Pali took that to mean was that he should do research in biology to see how the acausal nature of heredity could substantiate or prove the validity of synchronicity as a factor in evolution. In other words, as far as I know in biology, Darwin doesn't quite get it right. because there are developments that don't make sense from the term point of view of natural selection. So what causes them? And this, one of his friends, Max Delbruck, was a physicist who came to the States and did research with a fast reproducing bean, I think, or a plant of some sort, and tracked DNA changes or some sort of structural change in the plant, which could be reproduced quickly, to see where there were changes in the structure of the plant in an evolutionary way that wouldn't be explained by natural selection. And then to see, is there a pattern in that randomness? It's actually kind of an interesting idea. But what von Franz felt Pauli did was avoid personally dealing with synchronicity in his life, i.e. her, and thinking it all had to do with objective research in biology. So that's where this paragraph is coming from. And yes, again, you see the absolute. I mean, again, it's, you hear this kind of thing a lot with, I think particularly today, that psychology is sort of in public consciousness. And when people with a character disorder get a hold of it, they will tell you a correct psychological analysis, but there's no feeling in it. In other words, a normal person would have said, because you refused to show an interest in biology, you didn't correctly play the role of anima that I wish from you, whereas I naturally respond with animosity. I'm sorry. Or can we get past that pattern? Psychology is used to justify pathological behavior. And there's no emotional reaction when the pathological pattern is seen to want to change it. If you listen, you'll hear that a lot, and it is very disturbing. Because they'll come in and they'll tell you exactly what's wrong with them, but there's no emotion. And they almost use their understanding to justify what they're doing. Oh yes, I do this because I have an anima problem. And then that's where the discussion stops.
So it's always rationalization?
It's really, the insight becomes a rationalization. And see, that's what he's doing here. Again, remember, uncommitted archetypal thinking.
That's interesting. The last time you even wanted to pull me into the turbulence. even that was her fault that he felt any emotion at all.
Right.
Even with her.
Right. Right.
It's her fault.
You see, and as the author correctly says, that's power. Power. You be what I want you to be. You see, a weak person will fall into that and will become that. And they will mistake that for a relationship. Yeah, until one day there's an explosion or a disease.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, again, I don't want to turn you against him, but I think it is really important to see what BS is and how these people work. And we have constantly taken the approach that this material is about more than Pauli, which I think it is. It's about our time. But it's also about Pauli and how his own power drive is one example of the larger Western power drive, and how science is the epitome of that. Science controls.
Well, and you know, I can see why. If his whole career was science and thinking,
right,
and that is then mode, and you know, if you're constantly doing that, then you're constantly reinforced for doing that.
Yeah.
You're constantly praised for doing that. I mean,
I get the Nobel Prize for doing that.
Yeah. Well, you can just
really understand why he would want to stay locked in that mode. And it would be hard to see the value in that.
See, there are plenty of little coquettes around Zurich who would love to play that role for him. Of course, it is ironic that he would meet the one woman who won't play that role for him.
Is that why he went to Jaffe?
I think so. That's why he went to Jaffe. She was a wallflower, as far as I know. I mean, that's a little unfair to her, maybe, but Von Franz was just full of vinegar, as well as a great compassion, but you didn't step on her toes, and if you did, you knew it. Tell you that from personal experience.
Do you think this is a general problem for males, or is this a more smaller?
I would say it's the problem with the Western masculine. Men've got it, women've got it. And for me, what could have been so beautiful about this work is that there is a power drive to science, there is a power drive to politics, and they have become wedded. And a sensitive person like Pauli, and he's sensitive on some level, was aware of that. And he was working on trying to understand that. And what he's shown is, you know, you have your own version of that. And that's inevitable. What could have happened is he both recognized his own power drive and recognized the power drive of the world, masculine world that he worked in, changed himself, and out of that experience began to express to the public how the collective worldview could and should change. And with his prestige as a Nobel laureate, people would have listened.
Be hard to frame, but I mean, in past discussions, you suggested that Jung is kind of an essentialist, and he also sees that, I mean, history happens, and it couldn't have happened any other way. It couldn't have been thwarted. It had to happen this way in order for certain conditions to come up, for certain realizations, so that the goal of consciousness could be moved forward. Well, if so, then what is it about this situation within the Western masculine? What is being called? What are we being called to? If the Western masculine has to embody this kind of lack of feeling.
Well, I think you got two questions in there. How do we get there? And then what are we being asked to do about it?
Well, okay. If we're trying to use him as an example, not only of his own personal sort of pathology or neurosis, but also as a symbol of a larger problem within the West about the masculine character.
Well, I'll stay with the manifest question. I think what he's being asked to do is recognize there are experiences with a power greater than his own willpower, and to honor the conflict that generates, and to tolerate that conflict until the psyche begins to resolve it. What will happen is his own willfulness will transform. That's alchemy. In other words, his will, and his love, lust, fascination, however we want to call it for Von Franz, would enter into a dialogue. But he doesn't let that happen. He doesn't let her affect him. He doesn't let himself be discombobulated. And then out of that dark night of the soul, which would ensue from that, a new ego model would be generated in imagery form in the unconscious. He would follow that and develop an ego capable of reciprocity.
But doesn't Jung also say that life is not a clockwork fantasy, so to speak, that everything isn't laid out and that consciousness and will does have its role? I mean, you know, that idea that everything is set out for us was not quite Jung's view, was it?
I don't think that's what he's saying. I don't think that's what Tom's saying.
I might not have articulated it well, but I can see how you could thinking that's what it was, but it does.
I see. Okay.
There's an intellect or whatever, like in the Aristotelian sense, that, you know, the fullness of who we are is already embedded in us, and yes, we have will that we can exercise to either fulfill that or not, or to stymie ourselves. And but also, I think Jung was saying that in the historical sweep of things, that humanity stymies itself for a reason, to create conditions and circumstances for the images to arise that help us to grow.
And also stymies itself, it went, could have gone another way.
Well, yeah, I mean, like...
That gets, that's my point.
Well, let's think about the nuclear power and stuff like that. Some of us think that, gosh, you know, they didn't have to develop this bomb. If the scientists would have all been like Pauli and said, no, we want to work on it, it wouldn't have developed. That it didn't play out that way. And there's kind of a... I think there's a reason for it, because it brought us to this situation where we now have to confront the reality of what that means. I mean, it's very current event stuff now, you know. I mean, the fact that we aren't the only ones that have developed this power.
It's scary, yeah.
It's scary, and the scare, this fear is for a particular reason, to generate a new image of what life on the planet could be, peaceful life on this planet could be. And is it peaceful life because we can blow the hell out of your country? Well, now we've got there's a dozen countries in the world that can say that to each other. We can blow each other out of the sky. And then what good comes out of that? So, in a sense, it forces us to try and be diplomatic, let's say.
And yet, I guess what I'm trying to verify in my own mind is that, but Jung would say, things could have, the images could have been brought up in a different way.
Yeah, see, I think there are a couple questions on the table. That's what's confusing. First question, I think, is... How did, you know, is it totally meaningless that we got to the point where willpower is so dominant? No. I don't know if we want to get off on that here. That's what Jung did an eye on. There's a reason for that. But that reason has come to the end of its usefulness. Your question, I think, is well taken, or your point of view. Okay, this stuff is coming up, but on what level do we understand it? For example, the nuclear people are dreaming of nuclear explosions. No?
No, I don't think that's what I mean.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, history has gone a certain way.
Yeah.
And this has allowed certain symbols to come up. But if I understand Jung, history could have also gone another way, because it's not a clockwork fantasy, and those same symbols could be been brought up in a different way.
But it didn't.
Right. Well, that's, yeah, neither here nor there as far as my point goes. It's just the idea of what Jung's outlook could mean.
No, I think there I lean a little bit on Tom's direction, that the fact that it did go that way is itself significant.
And also,
well, yes, I agree with that.
And it doesn't matter what could have been, it's what is.
I agree with that, too.
Okay.
That was exactly my point.
The other stuff is, okay, we have all sorts of imagery popping up around here, nuclear imagery, whatever. Apocalyptic imagery, and that itself is not necessarily negative. The question is, on what level do you take it?
But I'm wondering if Taoism is saying that it doesn't matter if those... those changes are different, like you were saying, and it would evolve differently, we will get to the same position in the long run.
I know Dow isn't saying it. I don't buy it.
Is it saying that, though?
It's saying it.
I kind of buy it.
Yeah, well,
I thought that thing, like that, it's a shot between the opposites, and so the way is never straight towards something, but it's the back and forth. I thought that's what... I mean, you described that in visions and in the dream. To me, that's what Ted's saying is, you know.
Yeah, I know, but I disagree.
Points and it's different symbols that come up, but in the end, you don't agree. Why?
Well, here's how Jung put it. The Eastern prejudice is that everything in the unconscious is meaningful. And the Western prejudice is nothing in the unconscious is meaningful. And the truth lies halfway in between.
But that doesn't dispute the fact that
there negates the fact that there's still it's not a straight path there.
True.
That it's winding,
but
and that it eventually...
The ego must intercede to make sure we get to that desired end.
Yes.
It's not a foregone conclusion, which is the East's position.
And that's what you're saying, the ego needs to be there to evaluate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully, correct.
Yeah, listen, you'll hear that. You'll hear that at Friends of Jung. It happened, it was meant to be.
Mm.
Bullshit.
Or it didn't happen and it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, I'm where I'm supposed to be. How do you know? I shouldn't say that. I'll stop here. But I was just talking to somebody who held that position, and then later came out that as a young mother, her children were being sexually abused. Was that meant to be?
Mm.
Well, now you're talking about my point.
Oh, good.
The question is,
and I'd say no, it's not meant to be.
You're suggesting though is that that person who's sexually abused is going to remain in that state of mind or sense of being abused, and that's where they're going to end up,
mm-hmm.
possibly.
See, I can't even go there.
No, I'm saying, is it possible that
they
still go down
feeling.
The road and end up where they were supposed to?
That is such an affront to feeling. To let a child be abused.
No, I don't mean that that's good, but I'm...
Yes, you do.
No, I don't mean that. I mean that...
If they're going to end up where they are...
Where they should be. Where they were meant to be.
Yeah.
But there's different ways you can get there.
Right.
And I would never want to condone...
I don't mean that I want that, but I'm saying mm-hmm. that happens. And there is one way...
Or maybe they shoot themselves.
Mm.
What do you say then?
Well, that makes it more difficult.
Yeah. People don't come to me saying, I'm getting where I want to go.
What I have come to is that we think of time in the regular, progression of things.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering more and more that as we approach death, you may enter a realm where there is timeless, and that everything can happen during that time. In terms of your own psyche and so forth.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
In all possibility.
Okay, that's enough of that, I think. Anything else? Now we go to Schopenhauer. Let me, we got just a few minutes for the break. I think it will help you if I give you a little bit of background on Jung's understanding of God. Because we're going to be talking about Schopenhauer's understanding of God, how Pauli supported that, what's wrong with that, what that means psychologically, and then how Jung understood God and what that means psychologically. It's not just a theoretical discussion, although it's going to start out that way, so don't give up. It'll sound a little grand, but it's actually very important. And I'd rather than just tell you things, I'd rather you be able to follow the argument from the beginning. So what I brought along was this book, God Image. I don't know if you know this. It's a wonderful little book. It's a study that Edinger made of Jung's last letters. And it's really in Jung's last letters that this point is discussed. So I'm going to start off, we'll take a break, then we'll come back and we'll finish it. I'll start off letting you follow Jung's argument so when we get to the point here, hopefully you'll be able to appreciate it more and just how important it is not only for Pauli but also for our time. I'm reading from the first chapter. All I'm going to do is read you Edinger's citation of Jung's letters in this book. But I'll give you the reference page in this book if you want to go back and look at this. Page 3. This is all Jung. He's writing somebody we don't know. Many thanks for your friendly letter, which shows that the Buber-Jung controversy is a serious matter for you. And so indeed it is. For here, that threshold which separates two epochs plays the principal role. I mean by that threshold, the theory of knowledge whose starting point is Kant. That's the big word here, Kant. On that threshold, minds go their separate ways. Big point. Those that have understood Kant and those that cannot follow him. Let me read that. On that threshold, mind goes their separate ways, those that have understood Kant and those and the others that cannot follow him. So Jung is saying there are two kinds of people. Those who understand Kant and those who don't. And that those who don't cannot understand Jung. It's kind of a strong statement. But it will cut through all this blah, blah you hear about Jung and religion, Jung and psychology and religion. This is the point. What does Kant say? I'm making it very simple. But the argument goes something like this. There is no such thing as metaphysical knowledge. There is such a thing as metaphysical experience. What's the difference? Knowledge presumes knowledge of what is known. Experience is your experience of what is known. That may not be a knowledge of the object. Put it differently. I'll try to give you a metaphor. An ant cannot know a human being because of the difference in neural complexity and the fact that there's nothing in an ant's experience to coordinate with our experience. So you can never say an ant knows me. You could say an ant has an experience of me, but the ant doesn't know me because my complexity is far outside its categories of experience. Now that's the difference between the very small and the very large. Suppose we go from the very small to the infinite. How can you say that a human being can know God if you say an ant can't know a human being? Big point. Jung is not saying there's not such thing as religious experience, but that experience is not necessarily an accurate knowledge of God. It is a knowledge of God which is defined by your experience. But is that experience an accurate reflection of God? No, says Kant and says Jung. That is, not saying in other ways what I just said, there is no metaphysical knowledge. There is metaphysical experience. So you cannot say, in Kant's understanding, I know God. You can say, I know my experience of God. But who's to say that your experience of God is an accurate reflection of God as much as an ant's experience of me is an accurate reflection of me? And actually, I'm a little rusty in my theology, but I don't think that is all that far from modern theology. It's been a while. I know Tillich doesn't necessarily get into it. I think Bush Carminger, I think she said Whitehead discusses this idea as another 20th century theologian. So what that does, it opens up sharing of religious experience. I was leaving campus from my French class, and there were some kids out there doing interviews. Well, they said, we're doing a survey, can we survey you? And they looked like Butler kids. I'm pretty sure they were not. And it was pretty clear after about 2 minutes that it was not an interview, they had sent me in to tell me about Jesus Christ. So they said, do you believe in the Bible? Well, kind of. I said, but I wonder if God has changed his mind. No. I said, how do you know? Because I know. See, that's what Jung is trying to get around. Your experience is that, but is that the fact? Well, there's more. We'll come back to that. Let's take a break.